electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two on this Wednesday. We start the countdown to Labor Day, Saratoga season, and its big highlight, the 2 3-year-old weekends, Alabama for the fillies, and then the boys, and one filly that might have wanted to reconsider, but that you can't do it like that. But the win by good by Catholic Boy, and what it means for his prospects down the road. That's a pretty fascinating topic. The son of More Than Ready, Sid Fernando, joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Catholic Boy has a really interesting pedigree. I think it's worth taking a few points a look at it, because I wanted to make a few points about some of the stamina that's actually within that pedigree. He's won at 1.25 on turf and dirt, and at first blush, it doesn't look like much, but if you read a little closer, I think you'll find some interesting elements to it that I think are pretty helpful in general, kind of analyzing a pedigree and looking at a pedigree for potential distance. So if you don't mind, we can start off with that.
Absolutely.
Well, if you're listening, and if you have access to the computer, I suggest you pull up a 4-generation pedigree or 5-generation pedigree or the free catalog style pedigree that's available from the TDN website in their black type library. But here's what I wanted to point out, Steve. First, let's just talk about the sire for a second, because he, even though he was fourth in the Derby, his real claim to fame, he was a very good sire here, but he was an exceptional sire in Australasia, and what was really interesting about him was that he sired Golden Slipper winners, 2-year-old, that's a prestigious Australian race, sprinters. He's had 25 G1 winners globally. Now, here's an interesting fact. Out of those 25 winners globally, you'll see that most of them were either in Australia or on the turf here, because 20 out of those 25 were on turf. The only 5 on dirt, and I'll tell you who they were, Verrazano, who went up to 9 furlongs, Roy H., sprinter, Daredevil won the Champagne at 2 at 1 mile. Buster's Ready, who was won the Mother Goose 8.5 furlongs. And then Catholic Boy, 10 furlongs now on dirt. Now, let's take a look at Catholic Boy's pedigree. And by the way, bred by Fred Hurditch and John Fielding of Watercress Farm, you'll note that the first dam is by Bernardini. The second dam is by Seeking the Gold. The third dam is by Nijinsky. And the fourth dam is by Court Harwell, a British stallion. Now, all of these are, these four stallions, the sire of the first, second, third, and fourth dams, are all horses that wanted a mile and a quarter, or were also known as sires of horses that, that, you know, stayed that trip. So that's right away, your sire structure of the dams is pretty strong. Now, when you go into the interior part of the pedigree and you kind of look at some close-up elements, you'll note that the first dam, Song of Bernadette, you know, she wasn't much of a mare, and race-wise, Catholic Boys are first stakes winner. Her second dam, Winner's Edge, who's by Seeking the Gold. Now, here's a really interesting hidden point in it. She's a half-sister, this stake place mare, Winner's Edge. She's a half-sister to a horse named Lucky Song, who was the high-weighted filly at 3 on the European Free Handicap at 14 furlongs and up. She won the Park Hill Stakes. So you have this really strong stamina strain. So you, if you go back, you know, obviously go back and look a little further, well, under the third dam, the Nijinsky mare is Lucky Song, that the Park Hill winner who was a high weight at 14 furlongs and up. If you go up under the fourth dam, the fourth dam herself was an Argentine mare who won the Argentine Oaks at a mile and a half. And under her, you'll also notice the Canadian filly La Lorgnette, who won the Queen's Plate. So right away, you see some very strong, unusually strong stamina components to it. And, you know, that certainly helps to put in perspective, Steve, the more than ready who, you know, might get you a good 8.5 to 9 furlong horse here, got you some extra with his family. And that, it's fairly straightforward to take a look at it that way.
Now, it has all the things that you talk about, that
right,
you know, that features strong, you know, stoutness and you know, staying power. And when you think
right,
Seeking the Gold and Nijinsky,
exactly,
and look at that fourth dam, daughter of Court Harwell, that goes
yeah,
back into the 50s, kind of
yeah,
a globe-trotting sire.
And you'll note that the fourth dam herself, you know, again, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, just in recent memory, you think about Argentine influence in pedigrees and stuff. Well, here, the fourth dam here is, you know, is an Argentine raced mare and bred. You look at the pedigrees, you know, personal Ensign, of course, coming from Doreen, who is an Argentine mare. Of course, the family of Cigar, Argentine. You know, usually those types of mares are the cream of the crop there when they come here. You're not just bringing over, you know, Argentine claiming filly. So when you do see an Argentine mare in a pedigree like that, you know, it's usually a sign that it was an exceptional mare.
With this pedigree, and knowing that he was able to win two 10 furlong events on both surfaces, who would that appeal to? And you know, knowing where, you know, my feeling on More Than Ready, that, you know, that he's I've referred to him as Scat Daddy Light. You know, this feels like a real boost to More Than Ready.
Yeah, it certainly does, and it shows a different dimension to him in this country late in his career, too. I mean, More Than Ready is 21 years old this year. So this is, you know, he's a horse. This is a horse, Steve, that'll have a lot of appeal because, you know, he was also a stakes winner, too. So it wasn't like he was just that late developing horse that came on. This horse had very good form at two as well. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of, he's going to have a lot of appeal. You win the Travers, you know, again at two, don't forget, he did the same kind of thing in a way. He won the Remsen on dirt. He won the With Anticipation on turf. You know, he's shown a lot of interesting characteristics that he was a graded, multiple graded stakes winner at two, now a multiple grade one winner at three. And, you know, he's the type of horse that actually is going to be very popular here in a way because, as we've pointed out, and I actually just tweeted about this the other day, I wrote that article in the TDN about it, too. But in 1991, only 5% of all races in the United States were on turf. Last year, through the end of last year, 17% were. About 4 days ago, somebody had calculated all the races at Del Mar, and I did the percentages, and I found that 39% of the races at Del Mar, for example, have been on turf this summer. The top tracks are performing at more than double the national average last year for the number of races on turf. So you take a horse like Kaplan Boy, who's a winner on turf and dirt, winning at a classic distance, winning at two. It's a good-looking colt. You know, he's got that good pedigree behind him. He's, and he's also got the More Than Ready component to be able to shuttle to Australia, where More Than Ready is kind of legendary as a stallion. There's a lot built into this horse right now, Steve, in terms of the potential stallion career.
Who in your survey of farms, who appeals? Where does he fit best in a stallion lineup?
You know, first you look at who stands the sire usually.
Yep.
Windstar does. Sire is aging. We already have Daredevil. But, you know, this is a horse that, could possibly go there. When you look at the connections through Sol Kuehlman and the agent, Brad Weisbord, Sol Kuehlman was a, you know, had done a deal with them with Exaggerator, who stands at Windstar, so they have it in there. Sol Kuehlman and Brad Weisbord had bought a small minority percentage in Justify and Audible, who are both Windstar horses as well. So there's already a kind of a running built-in relationship. This is all speculation, of course. But another More Than Ready, Verrazano, is at Ashford. It makes sense, the most sense, certainly, financially, to be able to compete for a horse like this. If you have a Southern Hemisphere plot kind of set up, because you want to be able to exploit his Southern Hemisphere appeal. And Coolmore, Windstar, their two farms obviously have done that. Coolmore does it on a regular basis. And what I mean by the Southern Hemisphere slot, if you can actually build that into your offering price to a potential owner, you're going to be able to outbid your competition. So, you know, those are certainly two farms that figure to have the most interest right at the top.
Let's shift gears in terms of this discussion, and I think the last couple of years I've voted for Hertrick and Fielding as Breeder of the Year. If they were going to do a Breeder of the Year vote for the Saratoga season,
hands down,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Rushing Fall, Diversify, Catholic Boy. Is this the year that Hertrick and Fielding get some recognition from Eclipse voters?
Well, it would certainly be nice. Their farm, Watercress, I actually had a relationship with that farm years ago because their partner was a good friend of mine, too, Dr. Phil, who died. And, you know, it's amazing what these guys have done. Two kind of standard bred guys who got into this business, and you know they're not buying the most expensive mares, and yet they're consistently producing high-quality stakes winners. There's a case, by the way, where they've also, you notice they fold horses outside of the state as well to take advantage of some state incentives, but they haven't needed to because the horses have been at graded level. Dr. Phil, of course, is Dr. Phil McCarthy, the late Dr. Phil McCarthy. He was a equine reproductive specialist, and he actually took care of Cigar. And Cigar was at that farm for a while, or was it? It might have been Dr. Phil's home farm nearby, but he was trying to get working on his fertility at that time. But anyway, these guys really have done a phenomenal job, and in fact, Karen Glassman, who does work for their farm and is their Twitter account, she DM'd me to ask if there'd been a breeder of the Whitney and the Travers in the same year. I mean, off the top of my head, the only one I could think about was Aladar, who won both races. But I'm sure, if this is studied, people might come up with it. That was just off the top of my head. But yeah, absolutely, Steve. These guys really have done a phenomenal job and should be actually in the picture for the Breeder of the Year at the year's end, especially with more racing to come.
Well, of course, he's going to have to compete with John and Tanya Gunther. Which is going to be
another small operation too. That, you know, again, I think they're going to be behind John and Tanya Gunther, realistically speaking, and notwithstanding Charlie Hayward's article yesterday that said that perhaps Justify shouldn't become the Eclipse Award winner. The fact that, you know, everybody else understands that the magnitude of what Justify did, and then the other horses that the Gunthers have bred on top of that, including Without Parole in Europe and Vino Rosso here,
yep,
and others. you know, with a small broodmare band. They're going to be selling the half to Justify in a few weeks. You know, certainly an exceptional performance. They would have to be the absolute front runners, Steve, you know, in anybody's book.
Agreed. Agreed. And after that, I'm not even going to, I wouldn't even speculate on who could be, on who could be third, but the two of them are standouts. And
yeah,
I've been trying to, I've been advocating for Hertrick and Fielding to get some recognition these last several years. It's a funny category because the voters don't seem to, I don't know, they don't seem to go beyond the, you know, a lot of the obvious. And
well, let me tell you something about that category, because I happen to know some information about it. Years ago, when I was at the Daily Racing Form, I was a bloodstock editor. This particular category, Steve, unlike all the other Eclipse categories, this is how it was voted on. It was two members of Daily Racing Form, me as the bloodstock editor, and I believe it was somebody else in editorial. It might have been Logan Bailey for the Kentucky office. Then two from the Turf Writers, and two from the NTRA. But, you know, the two from the Turf Writers were like, you know, people like John Sparkman, and I, at any rate, there were like six people from representing each group, and they were, we were pretty knowledgeable in the intricacies of you know, who bred what, and obviously we wrote about it. It was our métier. So I think once they went away from that and just put it out to everybody, I think. If it wasn't obvious, I think it got lost.
Yeah, and they look at the money and
yeah,
you know, and also the stake, you know, the stake total, and you know, there's certain outfits that have been dominating the category, you know, for an extended period. So this hopefully is a year that the people, you know, flip the, open the hood and poke around. Before we talk about Keeneland, because of course the sale will be underway when we talk next week, said, and I do want to get you to preview the, you know, the early catalog, but we should touch on the 3-year-old performance, Promises Fulfilled. And I kidded Dale Romans on TV and on radio. I mean, single-handedly, Dale is improving Shackleford's stock with this son of the Big Red Horse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about how the trainers and the owners will go back to the sources. Just recently, we mentioned on this show Catherine the Great's owner and trainer combination of Cassie and John Oxley, going to the sale and paying the top price or one of the top prices for Catherine the Great, who was from the first crop of their uncaptured. You know, same type of thing here. Dale trained Shackleford, and it's only correct that he ends up now racing his first grade one winner, isn't it? Yeah, I believe it's his first grade one winner, Steve.
Shacks, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea that Shackleford himself won the Preakness, was able to stay, he's out of that very big staying mare, Yotsi. Otsi line of mares, but he was a speed horse. He was by Forestry, a son of Stormcat, and even though his dam Otsi was an unbridled mare, was responsible for adding a ton of stamina to him as a racehorse that allowed him to, you know, win the Preakness and become a fan favorite on the front end. At stud, you'll notice he's really reverted back to really getting his best horses are sprinters. And I think you know, there was one pretty good horse that was on the Triple Crown trail for Todd Pletcher that the name escapes me. He's a sprinter, though. They tried to stretch him out, but it was a similar type of thing. You know, I don't know if Shackelford's promises have been fulfilled, but his son has certainly fulfilled some of that with this win. And the people at Derby Dan have to be happy about that.
You got a figure, and seems ticketed toward a Breeders' Cup sprint try. And
yeah,
the sprint, for the first time actually in a few years, it feels like the sprint is going to be well attended. And it's funny, it was a glamour division for a long time in the Breeders' Cup, and you know, then it, between the filly and mare sprint edition and then the dirt mile, it's kind of taken away from the sprint, which was a catch-all, and some of the best sprints have included, you know, fillies and mares competing in it. That was one of the highlights, and you know, not that they didn't deserve their own division, but you know, there were, you know, some very notable sprint moments with and Breeders' Cup history with females. Sid, turn our attention toward the sale, and with everything going on here and going on the racetrack, really have not, since the Saratoga sale wrapped, haven't had a chance to look ahead to Keeneland, but I see some early analysis of the first catalog, the first couple of days,
yeah,
hitting the, I saw that Oppenheim had a piece and some thoughts.
Well, I've been looking through it for my day job at work, Thurbert Consultants, obviously. And, you know, I don't know, I didn't read Bill's piece, but I made some tweets about this the other day. It's one of the strongest book one catalogs I've seen. When you're looking at these sales in terms of an elite sale, you're looking at A, sire quality of established sires, B, the quality of the new sires on deck. That's on the sire side. On the other part of, on the female side of the pedigree, what you're looking at are big mares or producers of big horses. You're looking at young mares from really deep families, young graded winners that have first foals. You're looking at mares with first foals, and just the depth of the quality of families. Now, taking all that together, we've got such established sires now in this country as Medaglia d'Oro, Warfront, Tappet, Curlin, Uncle Mo, Quality Road has now come up to that level. More Than Ready, who we just spoke about late in his career. You've got Pioneer of the Nile, Kitten's Joy, Candy Ride. I mean, You've got Into Mischief, Malibu Moon. You know, we have an incredible array of pretty high-quality stallions at the top. And then, you know, sitting on deck with their first yearlings are horses like American Pharoah and Honor Code. So there's an incredibly great menu of sires in this sale. American sires. Galileo, in fact, only has one representation in the sale, and that's a really nice filly. Turning to the female side of the pedigree, Steve, like I mentioned, you've got Justify's half in this race, Instagram's half. Practically, I mean, it's just an incredible representation of really high quality, good horses, current horses that are racing right now, have siblings in this race. You've got a lot. Book one, of course, is, you know, young mares at the top, which are the most appealing. Mares that haven't been exposed yet. So you've got a lot of young mares that are from really good families. And as I tweeted the other day, for me, it's just striking, the absolutely striking, the mares that have been bred to Warfront. I mean, they just really stood out, of course. Medallia, Doro, Curlin, Tappet are all bred to really fantastic mares. But the Warfronts, and you can see the Coolmore influence in this too. A lot of Galileo mares from really incredible families have been bred to Warfront. So you're going to have, because of this, you're going to have some major European bidding on these horses, Steve. Hmm. So I think you're gonna get you know, everything is laid out. Everything is laid out for it to be a big sale.
Starts on Monday, and they're selling about 250, give or take, a day, and the first week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The Friday's a dark day. Those are all book one, basically. So you got 4 days of book one. And we talked about this at the time when they announced how they were structuring the sale. And it's always interesting to watch how the sales company tweak the presentation, Sid. And this feels like what should be, as you suggest, just a blockbuster week next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week or the week after? Yeah, the week after, right?
Yeah, the 10th, starting the 10th.
Yeah.
Losing track. Yeah. Yeah, a week from Monday. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
No. Book two will take place on the weekend, 15th and 16th. They'll come right back on Monday, Tuesday for book three. Book four, interestingly, no straight through after that dark day without another interruption. So the big box store, as they say, of the sale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, real bellwether.
No, looking forward to coverage. It's always a great way to move from the summer racing season into the fall and toward Breeders' Cup. And Sid, I can suggest a couple of answers to the question early on about when we talked about Hertrick and Fielding. Looks like maybe Green Tree, Mrs. Helen Hay Whitney, Swing and Sway, won the Whitney in 42, shutout won the Travers in 42. So that may be the trivia answer.
Yeah, and also we got a tweet here. Easy Gar won the Travers and the Whitney the same year too, like Aladar.
Well, so did Key to the Mint.
There you go.
To the men, and he at 8:30, I think. 8:30, I think, won both two.
I'd have to look things up.
Well, 8:30 is a personal favorite. That's one of my all-time. He's one of the all-time greats for George Widener. But he won both. Key to the Mint won both. Easy goer. But I think that's our answer. Green Tree bred a Whitney and a Travers winner in the same year, 1942.
Wow, that's great, Steve.
And for those of you that this is one of the real sore points that in racing we don't have an Elias Sports Bureau, because some of this research is so esoteric and so crazy that it's hard. You need some real research assistant types to dig in.
Yeah,
to this
we should have. That's such a fantastic idea. If we had something like an Elias, I'll tell you what.
Yep.
I would put Francis J. Caron in charge of that thing, and the industry would be better off for it. I mean, she is a research machine, and we need that in this business.
And I agree.
Need somebody,
I agree.
You know, absolutely. You hit something on the nail. You know, a Thoroughbred Ideas Foundation. I'm going to bring that up to them.
All right, good job.
I'm
supposed to finish on the initiative from the spring. I got to get with Tom Law, execute the idea that we happened with the historic preservation, the materials publicity offices. This coming from the time I get to spend every year at Pimlico in the in the vault with the photos. So I gave that idea, and I said that I would champion it. So I'll take care of that. You take care of this, the other one.
Oh, yeah, I will. Yeah, but it was your light bulb.
There you go.
It was your light bulb that went off.
That's it. Well, Sid, as always,
thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and get a hold of Sid. The planning stage is really upon us, and obviously there's the yearling sale to get through, but Broodmare's going to go through the ring November and make some decisions. There'll be plenty of mares, I'm sure, that'll be claimed in coming months. You got September, October, November, December, to January. Plan your program, and Sid will help you. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. You can reach out to him on Twitter, any which way. Sid is easily accessible, and he'll help you. Broodmare compatibility analysis. Figure out maybe a new sire, whether you're breeding to race or breeding commercially. Take a time out here. Come back. Check in with Dick Powell. Get Dick's thoughts. Get his post-Travers analysis. Look forward to talking to Seth, too. We're going to handicap the pick six sequence. I'll see if the scratches are up. Maybe we got some help from that. That'd be good. And John Parada later, too. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. About 15 to the top of the hour. Spend it with Dick Powell. And still looking here. And give me 1 second to see if we've got the scratches up for today's action. And we do. Andy got them out. He's been so great with this all meet. So that'll give us a little bit of assistance on what is a tough sequence with a $300,000, nearly $300,000 carryover. 2 days into the start of the Saratoga closing week. And Dick Powell joining us. And Dick, before we talk about anything else, got to get a little bit of recapping in. Some thoughts about Saturday and 149th Travers.
Well, before the Travers, we got to see just one of the best horse races I've ever seen. The Purcell Ensign was just fantastic to watch. The strategy that Mike Smith employed in order to keep Abel Tasman out of traffic down on the inside, threading horses, coming out of the backstretch, going up after a long shot, not even worrying about her, and then takes the lead, and Jose, who on a late was farther back, came up the inside, and I'm like, oh, Jose, the speed horse is going to back up into you, but he got right around, and at the 5/16th pole, Jose is still sitting chilly, and I think he recognized that if he gets into a fist fight with Abel Tasman, he can't win, that her stride is so long that if they go stride for stride, Abel Tasman's going to win. So all of a sudden he gets in there, he shakes the reins, he squeezes his legs, he starts working hard, he catches her up. And then unfortunately, in my mind, she drifted out a little bit in the stretch, and when he tried to correct her, she came in as Mike was coming out. Now, Mike was coming out anyway. Mike has the lead in a grade one stake race. He's just going to do it. And at that point, they make contact. It was pretty hard contact. And the stewards did not take a look, actually. There was no inquiry. Jose did claim foul, and they left the result stand, but which is kind of a shame because it took away just it kind of put a downer on just a fantastic race. One of the best races I've ever seen at Saratoga. I was on my feet jumping, screaming, and it was just spectacular.
Nice. I kind of was surprised that there were so many people that were aghast that there wasn't a change. It would have been one thing if Elate had kept a straight line and Abel Tasman came out to meet her and hit her, but that's not what happened. You know what's funny about these Dick, I know it's hard whether people have even bet or not, but people have to look at these decisions or non-decisions and take the personalities out of it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being, it's wishful thinking. But invariably, these kinds of discussions come down to the people that prefer trainer and connections A to trainer and connections B, and that's not the point. You can't, and people seem to think that that carries over into the steward stand. And you certainly hope it's not the case. I mean, there's been, I can think of one thing, that a couple different things that has been discussed over the years in this area, but you can't think about last year's occurrence or that anything else.
make up call for last year's coaching club books. I know that was really pushing things, and unfortunately, and there's been a couple of, I wouldn't say controversial DQs, but watching on TV, you got a 10-minute inquiry, so of course, what else are you going to talk about but the inquiry? And everyone weighs in, and twice I completely agreed with Andy and couldn't disagree anymore with Paul LaDuca and Tom Amos on the two different incidents. But meanwhile, the public is watching and listening, and so we're conspiratorial enough. I always make a point. We are a negative-sum game. People come to the track with so much money, and they go home with that much minus 20%. So you do have a built-in sense of unhappiness. And then when you add to it these type issues. Now, Saturday, I'm not saying it's a bunch of newbies, but 49,000 people means there's some people there that aren't hardcore players, which is good for the game. And yet they see the replay, they see the contact, and gasps go up. They go, whoa! And they automatically assume it's coming down. It would be nice if it were explained. Just period. If it would be nice if it were explained. Instead of just saying the result stands official, that's nice. Can you at least tell us why the result stands official? Because when I read the steward's report, it basically says it didn't affect the outcome. Well, yeah, but was it a foul or not? First thing should be, was it a foul? Second thing, did the foul affect the outcome? But by saying it didn't affect the outcome after talking, this is the thing. Now I'm back on one of my pet peeves, Steve. Why talk to the jockeys? After talking to the jockeys, it was the foul didn't affect the outcome. Well, what are the, you got different levels of English fluency and just all sorts of things. I mean, I watch Major League Baseball, and they go to a replay, as much as I hate it. they all talk to the players. Were you safe? Did you have your hand down? Did you touch the base? So I don't know, but it was just a spectacular race. There's reasons why we go to the track, and there's reasons why we put up with a lot of stuff. And Saturday was one of the reasons why we go to the track, if not the main reason why we go to the track, to see something that memorable. Was just fantastic. The Travers, I thought, was a big anticlimax. They get out of the gate, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm watching. I saw good magic break there. I see Jose rush up. I watched all the early races from Friday and Saturday, and I know there's a tremendous speed bias going two turns on the main track. So, yeah, if you're not up early, you're not up there. And then I like Bravazo, and he was fairly close because he broke well, which might have taken away some of his kick at the end. But when you go back and just disassociate yourself from the race and just watch the runners in the race, the two speed horses run 1-2 around the track, and the only horse that made up any meaningful ground was Bravazo. The rest really...
Well, King Zachary made up plenty of ground.
Yes, he did. He was dead last and got up to fourth, yes. But Bravazo looks threatening at one point. And but he ran well, and I don't know. It was the Travers, and we did have a winner, and what it means, I really don't know. He's a nice horse. He's versatile. To do what he's done is pretty remarkable. I've kind of been a Mendelsohn fan in the sense that he runs with an American running style. He won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf by gunning to the front with Ryan Moore and using his natural speed and holding on. The Derby all went bad for him. My big negative on him was the Dwyer, that he just was cruising along for 6 furlongs, and then the bottom dropped out. But then that might have been the virus that's kind of crippled Aidan O'Brien's yard. And those horses seem to be getting their form back. So Mendelsohn was terrific. And Gamely held on for second, because I needed Bravazo for second. I needed a late to be put up to win. Neither happened. But it was still a great day.
Agreed. And the weather has helped us here, and looks like it's going to be pleasant through Labor Day. So let's finish with a flourish.
Oh, I think so. And I look for, 6 turf races a day.
Yeah, more or less.
Minimum. Yeah. So if you like turf racing, you're going to get it.
Well, for those that spent the middle portion of the meet saying is how they couldn't play the cards at all because of off the turf, I guess they're going to be playing, with gusto.
Well, speaking of the turf, I do a Saratoga diary every night after
yes.
the races, and it's on twinspires.com/blog. That's the easiest way to get to it. And yesterday was the week 6 wrap-up, and I put all these numbers into a spreadsheet and keep track of the races, and then I break out last week and who did what last week. Manny Frankel had 7 winners last week, so he was tremendous and stuff like that. And Chad only had 3 and Todd only had 1, so everyone expected those 2 trainers with all the stake races to prosper, and they didn't. So I go through all this stuff, and I get to the turf race. Now, historically, there's always been a difference between the inner turf and the Mellon turf. And the inner turf was more chaotic, and the Mellon turf was more formful. And some years it might be 35% winning favorites on the Mellon and 25-28 on the inner. Well, this year the results are just off the charts, but bizarre. So overall, 129 turf races, because there was a dead heat, so that screws up the numbers. 129 turf races, or what do I have here? Average field size, 8.68. Average win mutual, 13.15. Favorites, 31%. Okay. That's about normal because we're taking all turf races. Now when we break it down, inner turf, 63 inner turf races run, field size 8.62, almost just about average. Average win price, $14.82, a little bit high. Winning favorites, 20.63%. Only one out of five inner turf races are being won by the favorites. Okay, now we go to Mellon Turf. 66 Mellon Turf races. Average field size, 8.86. A little bit higher, but not dramatically higher. Average win price, $11.72. Now, $11.72 is dramatically different than $14.82. And we're getting into a good sample size here where some crazy long shot isn't affecting it as much. Win percentage, 26 winning favorites out of 66 races, 39%. So we have 39% winning favorites percentage on the Mellon Turf compared to 20% winning favorites on the inner turf. But wait, there's more. I went through, and this is really a cry for help on my part, Steve. I need counseling. Why am I sitting here looking at this stuff? But I went through the turf sprints, which some people like, some people don't. Well, there were 41 turf sprints run in the first 34 days, which is actually a little bit below normal because of the rain. Only 11 favorites won the 41 turf sprints, which was something like 26% favorites. Now, this is on the Mellon. So then if you back out the turf sprints on the Mellon from the two-turn races on the Mellon, you're left with 25 two-turn races on the Mellon, and 15 favorites won those races, which gives you a win percentage of 60%.
Wow.
Now, you want to see a difference between two turf courses. Now, one thing, and I like turf sprints, and when I worked for NIRA, that they were unheard of, and I advocated them, and it wasn't until way later that they got implemented. But one thing they've done is because they're always run on the Mellon, and they run so many, we run so few two-turn races on the Mellon. And as a handicapper, I always like to see a horse that might have gotten in trouble on the inner turf going two turns is now going on to two turns on the Mellon turf or something, you know, some corollary like that. But we don't get that many, but the 25 Mellon turf two-turn races, 60% winning favorites. So that's, I mean, I had to double check that.
That's amazing. That's great research, Deck. And that's.
That really is.
It's stunning.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reinforces your intuition that the inner turf is tougher, that you can get in trouble. Even though the stretches seems like it goes on forever, you lose momentum on the inner turf course. If you have trouble, it's hard to overcome. With a Mellon, you can sweep up, you can go wide. When they had that rail out 27 feet, I mean, horses were winning on the outer rail, coming down the absolute outside of the Mellon turf course to win. But the rails were down now, and especially last week. I mean, the rails were down on both courses. So I can't attribute anything to, well, the rail was up on one and the rail was down on the other. And the rail today will be out 9 feet on the Mellon and zero on the inner. I wrote that down somewhere, but I'm not entirely sure. But I know that'll be out when the scratches come out, so check that out for yourself. But I know one of them is going to stay on the hedge for the rest of the meet. The other's only out at 9 feet. So just some kind of crazy differences. So in my mind, if you're looking at a pick six and there's two races on the inner, two on the Mellon, I might be spreading, if I have X amount of bullets, I might be spreading a little bit more on the inner, and I might be able to tighten up on the Mellon because formful horses seem to succeed at a higher rate than they do on the inner.
Well, and it is the 9 feet on the inner today, and I'm going to suggest you even do one other thing, Dick, that might further distill this, and that is to look at the state bred, those state bred, particularly the allowances and the hybrid, you know, the optional claiming allowances. Those, I repeat this every summer, and it's not just limited to Saratoga, they invariably produce the best results to take shots, and you'll get triples that have all double-digit horses, and I whether it's just the fact that they're more tightly bunched as a group, and you know there's less separation. I don't know what exactly makes it so, but it feels like the state bred allowances on the turf, and particularly the inner, and here's a maiden special today, you know, for three and ups that closes out the card. These have been, for me, invariably the most lucrative opportunities every summer.
I will go back and I will sort everything from bottom to top. So in other words, I'll have all the longest priceless horses listed first, on down to the lowest price favorites.
All right.
And then take a look at what commonalities do those horses, let's say, pay more than $20 or something like that.
Exactly.
What groups are they coming out of and stuff.
Well, and the guys at Derby Trail, Jim Bennis, who is a terrific contest player, Jim has been tracking the $20 and up winners based on rider, and it was more or less a bit of a contest suggestion at the beginning of the summer, you know, what rider is going to produce the most $20 winners. And it's amazing, actually, 6 weeks, you know, in the books, and how many $20 plus winners have come from the absolute top layers of the jockey colony. It isn't just Santana and Dylan Davis and Jose Lascano, you know, the middle, kind of that middle group, Johnny and Rosario and the Ortizes. I mean, they've all had, you know, they're $20 winners plus. And then of course there's been the invaders, you know, there's been, you know, some of the outsider riders that have come into town and, you know, hightailed it out of here with the money.
Well, I've come up with kind of a new idiot theory, and it's happened twice, so therefore it's foolproof. look for a rider that should have been suspended. So in other words, some rider commits, in my mind, an egregious foul. So you automatically think, well, they're gonna get days, whatever. And they don't. And for some reason, the two of them, Manny Franco and Junior Alvarado, have just been night and day how much better they've been since I thought they were going to get days. Now, I could see if there was a time period, like if you had to wait a week to find out if you're going to get days, yeah, you might be riding with a little extra verve to make up for what could be a time on the beach coming up. But it's just like, I noticed, you know, what Saratoga does to you for 40 days is you get so immersed in everything. So stuff like that penetrates my thinking.
I love it.
Not always good, but it does.
Well, there's one, and you can slip that in with the, you know, rider's first mount back after an injury. That's the...
Yeah.
One of the other foolproof maxims that is strictly anecdotal.
As long as the other riders know that it's his first ride back from an injury.
Well, we've got you. Do you have anything today? Seth Merrow and I are going to go through the pick six sequence, but do you have any lean in the sequence that might help people today? Leaning on?
Just some like it hot ground.
Okay.
And
all right.
And then
in the feature.
Yes. I thought he was visually spectacular. I don't care what distance the race was run at or anything. He was awesome. So I expect him to come back and run big.
Well, we're looking forward to this sequence. It's a fun, challenging group. There are two healthy scratches out of the with anticipation. You can take out the one and the three. And so after the MTOs, we're left with a field of six. And that includes Phil Gleaves with Swamp Rat and Some Like It Hot Brown, as you mentioned. Pletcher with both Opry and C-Now. C-Now a winner early in the meet and was impressive visually as well. Brian Lynch comes back with Joyful Heart. And then Carlos Martin with a bit of a price in here, Gunslinger, the Irish bred. Yep. So field of six, you got a very tough bunch, that state bred group going seven, some real hard hitters, and you got two out of there, but it's still a field of nine that is super competitive. So.
And in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Go ahead. Take us to the lake.
Housekeeping note. Wednesday, yep. September 5th, the Henry Paxson closes, which would be run on September 16th for Pennsylvania-bred two-year-old fillies going six furlongs. And also the same day, the Presque Isle Mile will close on Wednesday, September 5th, and the Presque Isle Masters will close. So all three stake races, two of them run on September 16th. The Masters will be run, the Grade 2 $400,000 Presque Isle Masters will be run on September 17th. But they all close on a week from today. So any horsemen out there that are still thinking, and you should really be thinking about the Mile and the Masters. If you don't have a PA bred, then you can't think about it. But those two races, just as fantastic. And I'm sure we'll be talking about the Mile and Masters a lot more as they get closer. But I just wanted to clear that up. This Sunday is the Mark McDermott Stakes, and it's a $100,000 race for two-year-olds. And it did attract state bred two-year-olds, but it did attract a filly, Amy Farrah Fowler, who won first two races, won by first time 5 1/4, second time 8 3/4. They shipped her down to Monmouth, where she ran in the Colleen. Now, that's become a turf sprint, and it was off the track. She acted up at the gate. She ran second. I'm expecting a big race out of her against the boys this coming Monday night. So Monday night, race number six is the Mark McDermott Stakes. And Amy Farrah Fowler, the filly by Astrology and Ron Potts. And I thought, I know there's been talk about this horse up for sale because her first two races were terrific. And she's still with the same connections. Huber Vila Gomez will ride back. And that's a 28% jock trainer angle with her. So she takes on boys and she draws outside, which I think will help her a lot. Last night, speed was very tough, especially going two turns. There are a couple of horses that opened up leads and just were not going to get caught. The sprint races, especially the 6.5, you can come from off the pace if you have any kind of pace up front, but the two-turn races are awfully hard to catch a good front runner who gets into that cruising speed. Tonight, now last week we did have a winner and we had another one run off in the post parade. Now, I count that as a winner. He didn't lose. So, but we had an $8 winner with the one horse that did run. Tonight, we like in race number three, this is a mile and 70. And naturally, Dick Hort picks a horse that doesn't really have gate speed, even though he's gone two turns. But number six, Chuckles Candy. Ryan Walsh is the trainer, added Lasix two back, ran kind of evenly. And its first time with Lasix, got a little bit shuffled back from the rail. Last time out, drew post six, rallied strong, just missed by a length. I think he can graduate tonight in race number three. That's number six, Chuckles Candy. And then we'll go on to race number seven. And that is another mile and 70 event, 12,500 beaten claimers. And I like the horse on the rail, number two, Selling Out for Teresa Conley. Now, this is a stretch out. This horse has been going 6, 6.5, moving out to mile and 70 with Antonio Gallardo. I'm sure he'll have this one up near the lead. Teresa does 27% going short to long, so this is a big move for her, a son of Soldat. And I think the speed will show up going two turns. So in race number seven, we're going to go with number two, Selling Out. And Prescott will continue that. I did look at the overall schedule, Stephen. They will continue the 5-day-a-week racing right up until closing day, October 4th. I know they started out with 4 days, and then they went to five, but they will stay five right through the end of the meet. So Sunday through Thursday, 5:25 post time each and every night.
Excellent. Dick, thanks for all the insights, and good luck the last 6 days of the meet.
Yeah, the listeners can check it out on twinspires.com/blog and just find my Saratoga Diary wrap-up and all the... And I got other details in there, but I just highlighted on the stick-out ones. And good luck on your pick six today.
Dick Powell, everybody. Presque Isle Downs and Saratoga conversation. Back after this.
We're a little past the top of the hour. Seth Merrill going to join us, and Seth and I will take you through this pick six. And I want to get Seth's opinion. He was this is the second week in a row, right, that we've had to do this, and the Wednesday card has been had a carryover. Seth had a couple of good ideas last week, but it was still a challenging sequence. Hour three, start of the last 6 days of the meet. It's sort of after yesterday and the way in which the circumstances involving the passing of John Asher kind of overwhelmed the senses. Kind of waking up this morning to, you know, oh my God, that's it. The meet's over. We got 6 days. This is actually a very nice time. If you've never come, if you've wondered and, oh, I'm going to only, when I go, I want it to be for Travers. Don't miss an opportunity. If you have a chance to come up this week, come. It's a nice week to be here. Things are a little bit less, you know, less crowded, and the town thins out quite a bit, actually, as well. This is a nice 6 days, so we hope you can make it. Let's take a time out. Talk to Seth, get his Travers thoughts. We had a really fun show. In fact, on the Facebook page for the TV show, for Loose on the Lead, I put the link to the show from Sunday morning. We did about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, hour and 20, I think. And we've gone over every week. It's pretty crazy. One thing I know we're going to do, I'll talk to Seth about it too. We'll have Sam Grossman on with us on Sunday. Sam's last day at NYRA is Monday, after a more than a two-decade run as the house bugler. Sam the Bugler. And Sam has been just an incredible and tireless. What do you call him? I mean, he's an entertainer. He's works the crowd all day long, and into the night too. He'll round town as Magnifico. What was it? El Señor Magnifico in the mariachi band, and it won't be the same, to be honest, particularly around Saratoga in the backyard without Sam. So we'll have him on Sunday, and I'll have him on the radio as well. Back after this, Seth Merrill.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Travers and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.